on May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere. This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
And we're back. It is officially Leo season.
Which is our season.
Yes.
Not that I'm buying into this, nor do I want to get into it, but fine.
But you are a Leo.
Like my good pals, Madonna, Barack Obama, who has the same birthday I have.
Jennifer
and Meghan
Lopez,
Markle.
Jennifer yes. Lopez, Shawn Mendes.
Shawn Mendes, really. Nothing about him strikes me as a Leo. Lewis, so I think you, this might be a bullshit. Say what?
Are you not an astrology person?
No. I'm more into being a good person. I don't know.
Okay. Well, we are joined here by Fran Tirado. That's his voice.
Hello. So sorry. I introduced myself before even I just, the astrology got me so excited.
Co-host of Food for Thought podcast.
That's right. THOT. Very important distinction.
Mm. And you're wearing all black in a sort of twinky Michael Kors way.
Oh my gosh. That is the worst thing anyone's ever said about him.
No, I meant it in a cool way.
Can Michael Kors ever be a cool reference? I'm not so sure.
He did 10 seasons of developing my sassy sensibility, so I say yes.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
You're also the host of The Outcast, a new podcast from Out Magazine.
Out on Thursdays. And Ira was on episode one, actually. You should go listen to it.
Ooh, so it'll be canceled immediately.
Honestly, some things were said that might have gotten us canceled. We'll see. Canceled from the jump.
Never been on a successful podcast ever.
And I am a Taurus, just for the record. Just so
that's my moon.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah, we
I
talked
love
about
that.
This
love
this
that
week
for
in
you.
A bit.
Yeah.
But I think Shawn Mendes displays Leo behavior sometimes.
He has Leo shoulders. That's really it, though.
I mean, he's being very aggressive about this Camila Cabello relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Publicly, so it's very Leo behavior.
I'm getting real. I mean, not to jump on this stupid narrative, but I'm really getting Gyllenhaal, T-Swift publicity photo vibes from this relationship.
Yeah. Or Hiddleston, T-Swift.
Oh, right. I forgot all about that one.
Wow. How are we all doing?
Doing okay. I'm in Los Angeles, so I'm extremely happy. My mental health is through the roof.
Mine was feeling great until the Cats trailer dropped. And I feel like I'm still in disarray.
I have to tell you, I mean, like, the internet made a big deal of it being a weird trailer. I honestly have never seen anything like that trailer in my life.
Ever.
It wasn't just disturbing. It wasn't just odd. It was so nonsensical. The Cats kept changing sizes. It was I mean, you talk about like trippiness. It's like truly the scale of everything kept changing. I honestly wanted to, not a lie, throw up at certain parts. When the cat has the fork and the knife or whatever, that's me vomiting.
Yeah, so this trailer dropped last week, like right before the weekend, and first of all, it was really, really trending on social media.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure the producers are happy about. I mean, any press, right?
And by the way, I do want to say it's so disturbing, I will see it.
Of course.
Absolutely.
I'm
going to
see it.
It's this year's Mother. That's what I think.
I enjoyed Mother, though. I don't know if I'm going to enjoy this, because here's the thing. Cat is notoriously bad.
Right. I mean, there's nothing in it. It's just random.
The music isn't good. The story is nonsensical. We'll get to that in a minute.
It's mostly adjectives.
Yes. And listen, I am an Andrew Lloyd Webber apologist. You know, I love Phantom of the Opera still. I like Jesus Christ Superstar.
I like one song in both of those things. Okay.
Sunset Boulevard has some okay songs.
One song, keep going.
There's one good
Evita,
song.
Evita, one song.
I like Evita.
My least favorite thing about Madonna's career.
Your least favorite thing?
Oh, you know what? That was... you do know I should know better. Yes.
It's based on this T.S. Eliot poem. Fran, do you know the plot of Cats?
Does it even have a plot is the question.
Yeah. So all of these cats are called the Jellicles.
Oh, great.
And annually there's this Jellicle ball.
Love that for them.
One of them will ascend to the heavy side layer and come back to a new Jellicle life. Basically, these cats are sort of in like a cat purgatory. They want to die, be reborn, and come back.
So Judi Dench is going to like explain mortality in musical form
while wearing a cat fur outfit. She was like a cannibal fashion person in this movie. Anyway,
I think they talk about the reborn stuff too in the trailer briefly in some of the dialogue. And I'm like, that is just a random thing to throw into a fucking trailer when a lot of people don't know what it means. But what was weird too was everyone was being mad online about, oh, you're dragging cats. Like, have any of you ever seen it? Like, it's always been bad or this or that. I'm like, yes, people have seen it. It was on PBS in 1998. Mm-hmm. It was on BBC. It was on Broadway for 18 years. Yeah. Which is
shocking.
It was on the West End for like 20-21 years. So people have seen cats.
We all heard Leona Lewis sing Memory in that one clip that got out. Yes.
Yeah. And now we have Jennifer Hudson singing Memory, looking like a drowned, harassed rat.
Okay, no, specifically her. I thought I was being super brilliant. It reminded me of Whoopi Goldberg in The Pagemaster. That kind of level of CGI. But the whole internet figured that out. So anyway, never mind. It wasn't that inventive.
Oh, she played the cat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot.
I think that CGI was slightly better.
There's just like, it's that weird CGI where like, it's just her face emerging. It doesn't look like it's connected to the body it's on. You know, it looks like the face is green screened onto the body.
Yeah,
you know?
I really have no concept of what the CGI is doing here.
Yeah.
And it's a mess. And the cast includes Idris Elba.
Right.
Taylor Swift.
Jason Derulo.
Rebel Wilson. Ian McKellen. James Corden. Who got all these people in there?
Do you know what is
really
among the weirder things in it? First of all, the amount of sexy breasts on these cats. Jarring. Secondly, the like round human bodies in it, like the way they made James Corden like hippie, like a human being, really disturbing.
Well, he plays Bustopher Jones, and Bustopher Jones is supposed to be sort of like a fat cat.
No, okay, yes, fat cats are shaped a certain way, though. I have seen Heathcliff. I have seen Garfield. those are accurate documentary depictions of fat
course,
cats.
Exactly. Yes.
This cat is just
the villainous cat from Rescuers.
Yeah. Oh, I love the Rescuers.
Rescue Rangers. Sorry, not Rescuers.
Oh, never mind.
I love the Rescuers though.
Different Disney Rescuers who are also animals.
True. Bob Newhart and Eva Gabor.
Yeah.
The combination of human shape and cat shape never seems to reconcile in this trailer. And again, brings me to the vomit place.
One of my favorite things about the whole response to all of this was that trending along with like the Cats trailer was furries and the furry fandom and the furry community.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, which I think is amazing and hilarious because like everyone's like, oh, like people dressed up in cat suits, the furry community must have something to say about this. And so we had our kink and fetish reporter at out.com go reach out to them and like talk to some people in the furry community about cats. And like there were people in the furry fandom who were like, yeah, the Cats musical made me a furry. Like that's part of their origin story, which I think is hilarious and amazing and wonderful. But like unanimously, like every member that they talked to, they were like, but this trailer, yeah, we don't claim this. This is like not our thing.
Right. There's something I think even sexier about the Broadway show somewhat, because you know it's like hot, you know,
it's
Broadway
people.
Dancers and singers. Yes. And they're wearing just like masks and like some leotards with like a bit of fur, like they're wearing costumes.
And it's more about the cat-like movements, like, you know, but still within a human body. Yes.
Yeah. This was it was disturbing.
It was so
disturbing, and I'm not here.
It makes you feel bad for calling other things disturbing, because this was actually disturbing.
The CGI, the fur technology, really.
Yes, and it's about all these cats basically just introducing themselves throughout the play, because they're all trying to introduce themselves and find out which one is going to be sent to die and come back
to the afterlife.
I know which one it is. I'm not going to spoil it for people in case they don't want spoilers from a musical that has been out since like 83.
I just want to say, by the way, it's possible to have a musical entirely about people introducing themselves. That's basically what a chorus line is, and still have it be good. But this is not on the emotional level of a chorus line.
No. Wow. Anyway, this was ravaging New York in the 80s. Cats was.
Herstory.
We have a great show coming up today.
It's frightening.
First, we're going to jump into this non-story that was blown up to epic proportions about Taylor Swift's new feud with Kamala Harris. It's not a thing.
How progressive? I don't know.
And then we're also going to talk about Donald Trump and criminal justice reform, which has somehow now involved ASAP Rocky.
It makes sense when you think about it.
And maybe the most legendary of the episode, I sit down with Miss Angela Bassett.
Guys, when I found out Angela Bassett was going to be on the podcast, I did my best to be there. Couldn't make it. But then I thought about it. Once upon a time, I got to interview Jane Fonda, who's like my number one by myself. And that was, you know, one of the great moments of my life.
Has she recovered?
Say what? She stormed out of the room, actually.
did you lock her in the room and say,
she's
you
here.
Can't leave?
Yeah. So the fact that Ira got to interview her by her, because she's like, you're Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good for you. And I can't wait to listen to it. And
well, Jane Fonda's your Angela Bassett.
That's more correct. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, we've got plenty more Keep It here, so stick around. The apex of politics and pop culture has allegedly come to a head.
And now it's broken off and rolling down the mountain.
Yes, it's dead. It's screaming as you wish. Last Saturday, music manager and entertainment executive Scooter Braun.
Just an infuriating name, by the way.
Really?
Scooter Braun.
Oh, no, I'm calling a man Scooter. How fun.
It's like, why do people keep leaving him on my lawn? He hosted a fundraiser at his house for presidential candidate Kamala Harris. The event was called, you know, Fireside Chat with Kamala, evoking Roosevelt, you know, just, I love fireside chats. I love the concept of a fireside chat. Because were people actually listening by the fire when the original fireside chats happened?
That's possible. But was he also by a fire? Yes, right?
Yes.
Okay. The idea that somehow you are more honest because a fire is nearby is very strange.
I mean, well, once you submit it for the approval of the Midnight Society,
oh, yeah.
there are no lies to be told.
Remember when they just invented new physics about how to ignite a fire? They're like, throw pebbles that are...
sand?
Yeah. It's like it's heavy sand.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think about that a lot.
Anyway, he hosted it, and it was attended by many people, including Ariana Grande, Katy Perry, Demi Lovato. I guess our invitations were lost in the mail.
How strange. Mm.
But because Braun is currently beefing with Taylor Swift over the acquisition of her masters, it angered the Swifties on Twitter, who turned their ire on Kamala and said that, you know, they are not going to be voting for her because she sided with Scooter Braun. Now, I will say this became prominent as a story because the Daily Beast wrote an article about apparently three Taylor Swift fans with anonymous avatars because they're stans on Twitter, which means they're avatar is a photo of Taylor.
Right.
And they have crazy names.
And their names are like Tay01654433. Yeah.
Right. And so the Daily Beast blasted this story out to, you know, obviously millions of people follow the Daily Beast. And so then it became a story. It wasn't a real one.
Uh-huh.
And that's part of what I talked about on Love It or Leave It last week or so when I talked about how that Jason Momoa sort of body shaming thing wasn't a real thing. It was just three or four people like making comments on Us Weekly's Instagram. You know, it's sort of the same as a lot of that backlash to Halle Bailey being cast as the Little Mermaid. Mm-hmm. It's like, how are we going to get past stuff like this becoming a story?
Also, if you've ever professionally blogged, you have to write something by the end of the day.
Yes, you do. And I feel like that's part of the problem too, right? You know, like,
it's a weird structure.
You've worked at HitFix, you know, like I worked at Daily Beast, and you know, it's that constant need to publish a story that isn't a real fucking story.
Yeah. To feed the beast, the Daily Beast, if you will. They are admitting it in the title of the website.
It is sort of interesting that a lot of people, I'm sure, were ready to believe this story because whenever Taylor does anything, you know, her fans really sort of mobilize.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even this weird thing where, like, you know, she's become a celebrity that it's almost impossible to make jokes about, too, right? Because her fans will attack.
Maybe, yeah. So I think also just like the peak years of making Taylor Swift jokes sort of passed. You know, it's like, it's just like they're all cliches at this point. When the original Taylor Swift Scooter Braun story broke, we were in, I think, World Pride or whatever.
Yes.
I could not have been more thankful that we weren't talking about that for a, for a couple of reasons. One, it was just a, her statement is just strange to parse, period. But two, to me, what was so weird about that long, I'll say, diatribe against Scooter Braun was she's talking about the business side of music in a way that almost no casual consumer understands, or like that her fans wouldn't understand. And
well,
so,
so that's the beauty of it, right? You know, she can talk about the business side of the music and her fans with maybe even a cursory knowledge of music, they're just getting her emotion and none of the business. So it's easier to smokescreen them.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, it's not that I didn't appreciate what she was saying and it sounded... I don't want to grade sincerity or whatever. I'm sure like the intent of it, you know, had some value to it. But for the most part, it's like, I actually understand less based on what you have just said. You know, it's like, am I mad at him? And so then when like people broke into two camps, like defending Scooter Braun and defending her, I'm like, I actually don't know who was correct. And then the whole business of her dad being involved was brand new news to me.
Okay, so... first of all, the dividing into camps between Taylor and Scooter, it's impossible for me to choose any side in this. And I'm glad I'm on neither, really, because Taylor's camp includes people like Halsey and Todrick Hall coming to her defense.
I forget that you come for Todrick Hall.
I don't love Todrick Hall's work.
Is it the basic nature of the Disney-ness or what?
I think I just got over the Disney-ness. And I think particularly during her Look What You Made Me Do era, when Todrick sort of used working with Taylor to prop himself up into like being like the black best friend and constantly tweeting, defending this white woman is just sort of wild to me. I also just think that he also was wild during that You Look What You Made Me Do promo tour where we're talking about how like Taylor is one of the best dancers he had ever seen. And it was like, nigga, you don't have to lie to kick it with what? Taylor. I mean, maybe she requires you to.
She's somewhere between Nelly Furtado and Jessica Simpson on my scale. I say that affectionately. I would be below all three of them.
Can she roller skate?
Are we going to go to the public fair video? One of my faves. Andy Dick stole the scenes.
He did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Funny guy.
Is it Ryan Seacrest in that video too?
Yes. It's Eva Longoria. Who else?
Eva Longoria. It's
Christina Applegate.
I feel like Vanessa Marcel may be involved as well, but maybe not.
Yeah. Could it have been Vanessa Manillo? No, yeah. It wouldn't have been her. They're not friends.
Vanessa,
right?
Redgrave. So part of me knew about her dad's involvement in Big Machine Records because, as one Swifty tweeted at me, Taylor lives rent-free in my head. I'm constantly thinking about her, which now I've worked in pop culture writing for years, and she is one of the biggest pop culture stars of the moment. So you kind of have to know basic cursory things about Taylor Swift before you write an article about her.
Totally.
So you don't sound dumb. Her father is one of the shareholders of Big Machine Records, and she left Big Machine Records, which she'd been with for years, to join Universal Music Group. So when Taylor Swift joined Universal Music Group, it was lauded as a pretty sort of big deal, you know? She joined back in November, and as part of her new contract, you know, any sale of Universal Music Group's Spotify shares resulted in a distribution of money to their artists non-recoupable. So she joined getting money for other artists on the label as well. And, you know, she believed that it would be a much better terms than paid out previously by other major labels. So that was a really good thing she did, actually. You know, she was using her power and leaving Big Machine to join Universal and also do something for other people, you know, because she's been very big about streaming rights. Like, you remember when she was going against Apple, and I'm sure Swifties were throwing their parents' iPhones out windows. And so it was really weird when this whole new Masters thing came up. And for like people who don't know, Masters, you know, are the original recordings of artists' music. It's basically just the right to release old music, to keep it on streaming, etc. There have been many artists who have problems keeping their masters. I mean, I actually don't think very many artists own their masters.
Right, right.
Because if you remember, there was that time where Michael Jackson bought, like, the Beatles catalog.
Right, that's what that is. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He bought the masters. JoJo had to re-record her masters.
Didn't Prince re-record his entire catalog?
I think Prince may have done that as well, but I think Prince has, because he, like, owns a lot of his masters. And that's usually why some artists will do that, right? There are re-record clauses that keep people from being unable to do that for a few years, but JoJo's had expired, and Blackground Music had her masters, and so she was like, I'm just going to re-record them myself. First of all, her new versions of them sound fucking great.
Oh, good.
Because obviously she's older and more mature as a singer.
JoJo of Arc, the smarter.
Blackground is also the label that Aaliyah was on, by the way, and they're the people keeping her music off of streaming.
You cannot find this woman's music anywhere.
Yes, which is why you couldn't find JoJo's music anywhere before either. And, like, Def Leppard re-recorded, like, Pour Some Sugar on Me and stuff like that so they could own their music. And I think Kelly Clarkson actually, like, tweeted or something like, girl, re-record your songs. But I don't think it's clear about when the deadline ends for Taylor to be able to do that.
Got it.
Anyway, there was all this back and forth, and Scott Borchetta, you know, responded to her Tumblr post, you know, basically saying that she was made aware of it. Her dad was made aware of it. But then there were also claims that her dad wasn't made aware of it because of conflicts of interest, and I don't know.
Yeah, shrug. Okay, yeah.
Basically, she knew about the sale, it seems, but, you know, she was still sort of blindsided by the fact that, you know, it's Scooter Braun who bought her stuff. And listen, her main feud with Scooter Braun is, yes, some people think he's an asshole. Some people don't love him. But also, her main beef with Scooter Braun is that he reps Kanye and is, like, friends with him and Kim. And this is all going back to Taylor hating Kim and Kanye.
Which was a big part of her letter. Yes,
which is sort of why it exhausted me, because I was like, get over it.
That is truly...
I'm tired of hearing about it.
Perhaps the most exhausting feud ever in pop culture history.
Right?
I hate.
And I saw the show Feud.
I hate that I have to know this much about Taylor Swift's music rights now. Like, that's just wasted brain space for me. But on top of that, between, like, Scooter and Taylor, it's like, y'all are out here defending millionaires. Like, you can't bully a millionaire. Like, Taylor Swift was, like, the highest paid celebrity in 2019. She was paid $185 million. That's crazy. Like, she cannot...
She topped the Forbes list 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
And I get that the bullying is a large part from, you know, like, the I made the bitch famous thing in Famous. And
which I do hate. I do hate terrible.
I do hate that. It looked... not as good for her, though, when Kim leaked that recording saying that she had signed off on it. So that's part of the feud, too. It's like she's mad that she was... That's one of the few times she's ever been publicly sort of exposed as lying.
Right. Because also it's like... Yeah, I mean,
it led into her Reputation era, too, where she was like, I'm a bad girl, I'm a liar.
Right. Because you never get a sort of candid moment from Taylor Swift. Mm. You know, she really is unlike... most very popular celebrities today in that way. So when you get like
her and Beyonce,
right? It's like those two, truly.
Yeah, they notoriously are just like very careful of their image, and I get why, you know, that sort of was a blow to her then, and it led into that Reputation era. But then it's sort of like it's still happening.
Yeah.
The one thing that I did love about her statement was she did talk about how gross it was that like she and a bunch of other celebrities were just like naked as wax figures in the Famous video.
Right.
Which I thought was gross, and I don't watch that video. But everything else, it just seems like this weird sort of like, please stop talking about Kanye and Kim.
Yeah.
We're tired.
Right. I've done my thinking about it. Thank you so much.
What also needs to be named is that the Swiftie fan base is disgusting. Like, they are bad people.
They're basically,
I mean,
Barbs, to be honest. Barbs and Iggy fans and Swifties sort of feud to be the worst human beings online.
Truly. No, actually, and like, I would intuit that like everyone in this room has been like the victim of like a Swiftie fan base like attack in some way.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean? And like the way they attack you is with like homophobic, with racist, with like, you know, I get like Islamophobic like death threats from like Swifties. I'm not Arabic. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, I think that's, it's hilarious that, you know, Taylor Swift's whole platform, one of her biggest platforms of like Pride Month, was like, stop bullying people. And she has yet to address the fan base itself.
Well,
you know?
I had no idea, and I will now no longer gift you with the copy of the Quran. for being on the show.
Oh my God.
No, I mean, but that's this whole thing too, you know, it's sort of like Taylor hasn't commented on the alleged Kamala Harris attacks, because what is this? It's not real. It's not a real story, Daily Beast. And Kamala's campaign actually, I think, slammed the Daily Beast for even writing it as a story, mm-hmm. because it wasn't a real story. And it's just part of that thing to, you know, make politics as pulpy and just sort of like bombastic as pop music feuds are, you here's, know, right? It's appropriate because Taylor Swift plays Bomba Larina.
No, right. No, stop.
Thank you for bringing it back. Here's my question. So that picture with Kamala Harris and Ariana and Demi and Katy Perry. If Katy Perry hadn't had that bomb hit this summer, would she be in that picture?
But as she said, just because you thought it was over for her career doesn't mean it's really over.
Well, this, lesson learned.
Will this reignite the feud between Katy Perry and Taylor Swift? Who's to say?
Right.
I know. Yeah. It was weird that that wasn't sort of the crux of some people tweeting online. But I feel like because they had that, oh, we're holding each other at the end of the You Need to Calm Down video, that the Katy
it must
and
be
Taylor
over.
One is over.
Yeah.
But how many instances have we seen of like, Taylor and Kanye sort of like embracing or coming back together in the decade since their feud's been going on for a fucking decade.
Right.
That's 2009 VMAs or 10 years ago. How long, you know, how many times have we seen that end and then start up again?
Right. Because they have to get into the niceties every once in a while, you know. A feud's exhausting.
At least these are nice celebrities to have at an event. This fireside chat. Because let me tell you, I went to a political fundraiser last week.
Really?
And I went so that I could talk about it on the show. Mm-hmm. It was a fundraiser for Marianne Williamson.
Oh, my God. Who's raising funds directly from the moon.
So it was supposed to be hosted by, like, Laura Dern, Dave Navarro, and neither of them could make it.
Of course.
And what was very funny, too, was when she went on stage, Marianne Williamson said, well, I want you all to know that Laura Dern could not make it today, but I just want to say, Laura, I've been seeing you like Kamala Harris's Instagrams, and I just want to know, the next time you like one, give me an equal like, too.
Oh, my God,
that is so deeply pathetic.
No. Wow.
She played it off as a joke, but it's like, you know she means that shit.
She could not be more sincere. And it also, pathetically sincere.
It continues the mystery of, is Laura supporting Marianne? Because we found out that they were roommates.
Right.
They were roommates?
I had no idea. Isn't that wild?
You didn't know that?
That's fantastic.
They were roommates.
I'm so glad
briefly.
To know that.
The Cut wrote about it. Right. But we haven't seen it together since. Like, not in 2019.
No. I mean, and now Marianne Williamson is lording it over her, of course.
Yeah. Alyssa Milano was there.
That is
because
where
if
the
you remember,
begin.
Alyssa tweeted that day that, like, I'm going to Marianne's fundraiser to hear what she has to say. And
she's the only one talking about healing energy or something. I don't know what she said. But the thing about Marianne Williamson, we're going to drop this topic in a second. I apologize. What she should be doing is exactly what she's doing, being an author of those type of books for people who need them. I guess she's like a very meaningful person to a lot of people. Why would that mean you should be the president?
Right. Yeah. What's actually been weird about the Marianne Williamson sort of rise now is that so many people I know have come out of the woodwork and been like, I love her. Like,
I have been like, a lectured about her.
Like, her books helped me come out or, like, helped me deal with depression. And it's like, she's been sort of, I guess, on the fringe. I mean, she's an Oprah spiritual advisor, you
correct.
Know? She's been on, you know, Oprah's show. Like,
I don't need Dr. Mehmet Oz in the White House, bitch.
I think this Marianne Williamson, like, fandom is, like, a distinctly Los Angeles thing because we don't have any of this in New York City.
Okay, I'm glad to hear it.
No, they're ask people. There are people in New York. I was at when I came to Out's party.
Oh, really?
For World Pride.
Oh,
there
were
some people being like, oh my God, I've seen you making jokes about Marianne Williamson. And I like her. I've been reading her books. She hasn't sold millions and millions of books and stuff without people being supporters. We just don't know about it.
And the gays love
Oprah
her,
is rich. Like, and Marianne's rich. Like, those books are in people's houses. We just haven't seen them.
Yeah.
Because they haven't come out and been like, read this. Anyway, she has some new book about love and politics that she was talking about on the Stephen Colbert show this week.
I always say she seems like someone who was asked to leave a West Elm.
No!
Ma'am, those sheets aren't yours.
No!
Ma'am, you've been standing at the counter for a day and a half.
All right. We will be right back with a woman who is not running for president because she is iconic and doesn't need the attention. Angela Bassett. Keep It is brought to you by Barefoot Dreams. Lewis?
Yes?
When you see footprints in the sand, that was when I carried you in my Barefoot Dreams robe.
Now, is that a Leona Lewis song? No?
If you want to bring coziness into your life, you turn to Barefoot Dreams, especially now as the brand is celebrating their 30th anniversary. With those 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams celebrates being the originators of everyone's favorite luxe home blanket. And while many have attempted to duplicate their blankets, robes, and more, Barefoot Dreams' fabrication and quality cannot be replicated, so don't believe the dupes. Girl, this blanket is it.
I effing love this blanket. I'm thinking about it right now, and I want to jump in my bed, which is sponsored by something that we'll do another ad for momentarily. Get ready. There's a reason why Barefoot Dreams has been on Oprah's favorite things list 6 times. Jesus, get a life, Oprah. My God. Dressing head to toe in Barefoot Dreams is the key to comfort, as their collection of ultra-soft robes, loungewear, and accessories are made with premium materials. Their products make the perfect gifts, too. I throw this thing on. I wear it like a shawl. I look exactly like Ellen Burstyn. And I am the coziest a human being can be. Because, by the way, it's still that time in Los Angeles where it's like pretty mild outside and then your apartment is cold. I can't explain it. I don't know things like basic science. For Keep It listeners, you can get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with the code KEEPIT15. Don't miss out on Barefoot Dreams' soft, soothing fabrics that will bring luxury to your life.
Tillamook Chocolate Collection ice cream is a total chocolate game changer. We start with unbelievably creamy dark chocolate ice cream. Then we add different chocolate treats, like chocolate cookies, chocolate cake, or chocolate brownies, to make 4 decadent chocolate flavors. Because sometimes the thing that pairs best with chocolate is more chocolate. Tillamook Chocolate Collection ice cream. Extraordinary dairy.
Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of blackness from NPR and how I live my life every day.
Oh, I'm glad to bear witness to it.
Each of NPR's black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of a struggle.
It sounds like you at Coachella. I'm already tuned in. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be black today, told from a unique black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of black stories, black truths.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as very nuanced and black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us.
Doesn't the black experience sound like a 3-disc Prince album we never got? Someone check the vault, please. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Starring in the upcoming Netflix movie Otherhood, out August 2nd, written and directed by Sydney Chupac, who you know from HBO's Sex and the City and Modern Family, we have an actress who needs no introduction, but I'm going to give her one anyway. She's iconic. She's maybe my favorite actress, Miss Angela Bassett. Honestly, my favorite actress.
Really?
Angela Bassett.
Oh,
yes.
That's so nice.
Angela, you are. And it's
that's
not
so nice.
A joke. It's grew up loving
I appreciate
everything that.
That
you do.
Oh, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, so it's an honor to have you on Keep It.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
Yeah. You were in this new movie, Otherhood. And what I loved about it too was you're dancing in this movie. There's a moment where you all hit the club. Mm-hmm. And I find that you're just always so mesmerizing on screen when you dance and use movement, you know? I mean, and not just as Tina, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, even the scenes in How Stella Got Her Groove Back, you know? Like, is that just something you love doing on screen? Do you love, you know?
I of course, I love dancing. I love music, especially if it's a good song. But you do feel a little self-conscious. You know, you hope you're not looking like really nerdy. You hope let me see, what are my best moves? Let me pull out some good moves. And then you can't know that for sure. So just jump in and have a good time and see what comes out. As long as you're enjoying yourself, it looks pretty fine.
Yeah. I mean, and you learned so much dance too for What's Love Got to Do with It as well. And you talked about how sort of like draining it was just doing that performance every day, right?
Without the other iCats, the iCats, dancing and singing, you know, any breath.
Do you feel you've had a role that just physically draining since?
Actually, not as draining. Mm-hmm. No. Although just recently I finished doing a movie in Berlin called Gunpowder Milkshake, which is an action thriller. Mm-hmm. And I had to do my own stunts.
Okay.
And of course, the stunt coordinator thought, you know, these actors, they'll come, maybe we can get 50% out of them. Mm-hmm. And then of course they have the double for you. And, but he paid me a huge compliment. He said, actually, you're giving me 95.
Okay. Great.
So I did most of it, except for one little tricky roll.
Okay.
Roll around someone's thigh, you know, and take them down to the ground. But
I mean, I know you work to get that. My friends and I have been obsessed.
But I was wishing I was 15 years younger.
No, I've been obsessed with that video of you. Did you notice that it went viral, the one of you talking about your diet and what you were eating?
Oh, I heard. And I just went on and on and on with a roll with it. Yeah.
You're talking about the Ezekiel bread from the Sprout, the cardio.
Yeah.
I mean, that video was very fun. I feel like I was like, okay, let me add this to my regimen for these action roles. You are doing that action movie. And what's interesting is that I really liked when you sort of first jumped into like the action world with Strange Days.
Okay.
With Catherine Bigelow. And were you still surprised, you know, sort of like the reaction to that movie back then?
I thought that movie was a little ahead of its time, you know, that audiences came to it a little later, you know. It was about on the eve of 2000, you know. And of course, we were in the 1900s and we just didn't know what was going to happen, if everything was just going to shut down, overload it. But yeah, it still holds up. I've seen it recently, so I'm really proud of it. And it was great to work with Catherine, you know. And it was such a big scope of a movie too. Mm-hmm. So hefty, you know, things that we were asked to do.
Yeah. And you worked again with a female director here on Otherhood. And how do you just find that feels for you, being on set with sort of a woman at the helm?
Oh, it's so calm and nurturing. She's not, you know, what she doesn't know, she doesn't know. What she does know, she's comfortable in. Mm-hmm. You like that. She's open to listening to everyone. You know, sometimes that's good, you know, and you process that and come up with the right answer. But no pretense about anything. So it really is a breath of fresh air. And it was her debut, her directorial debut. Mm-hmm. So it was beautiful to be able to support her in that, in a project that she also wrote and produced, because she's a writer producer and we know her work from Sex and the City, which was so, you know, spectacular in terms of female voices and, you know, different things, that issues and things that we go through. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was great to see her stretch out, you know, into the directorial realm.
Mm-hmm. And I know that even a film like How Stella Got Her Groove Back wasn't a female director, but I feel like rewatching that, it's felt sort of like revolutionary for the 90s, the way, you know, it just sort of paid attention to the female gaze in the film, you know, it took it from your perspective and it was sort of not what you would expect to see in a movie like that. Do you think we're missing movies like that now?
It seems maybe in this era, you know, where when you go to the cinema, a lot of the, you know, the tentpole movies, you know, they follow, they're about a certain thing, you know, whether the last one did, whether it's action or it's some superhero or a thriller or a car chase or something, adrenaline, testosterone driven. So it's refreshing to see, to have the diversity. I think absolutely, and just different voices. We all don't like the same thing at the same time, do we?
Yeah. No, it's been nice seeing you in sort of these, even these action movies, though, too. You know, I mean, you've been in tentpoles. You know, you're here in the Black Panther movies. And do you feel like that sort of brought you a different audience than the people who've been following your career for a while?
Maybe I got a few more Comic-Con.
What's that like?
Fans about Comic-Con? Oh, crazy enthusiastic enthusiasm, energy. See, even I perked up.
Yeah. I mean, because you see those like Marvel, those like Black Panther fans. Do you find that there are like Strange Dave fans who like find you like people who like that sort of sci-fi movie? Have you run into many of them?
Not too many, but you run into fans, and they have their film. They have their films. Mm-hmm. You know, they either like What's Love Got to Do with It or Stella or, you know, or now, of course, Black Panther or Strange Days. I'm hitting them all.
Yeah.
I'm trying to check all the boxes. Something for everyone.
I mean, and I asked you too about that video, but like even things with like Waiting to Exhale, like I feel like even people who haven't seen that movie, right? I mean, you're like a meme, you know, the Bernie's like burning the car, you know? Is that just something that is still wild to you? Like people, do you see people like, or hear about people online, like using that photo or using it as like a GIF or something?
I've heard about that.
Yeah.
I've heard about that. That's fun. That's fun and funny to me because you're just doing the work and you don't know it's a moment, you know, it's just a snippet, a moment. And we do that with films, you know, where there's a line or something that is just so truthful to us or whatever we're going through at the moment that speaks to us, you know, depending on our personality, you know, and what we gravitate toward. And that, you know, that moment of empowerment, you know, that it's a cathartic moment, I think, for a lot of people. It was for me, which is one of the reasons why when I came on that project, I was in the early part of it. And Terry McMillan, who wrote the book that the movie was based on, she always thought I would play Savannah. She just saw me as that character. But it's like, no, it was something about burning that car that that felt so empowering.
Who doesn't
want to
burn a car?
I know. Sell all your stuff for a dollar.
Talking about things that you were gravitated towards then, I really love that interview that you had with Laura Dern, you know, where you were talking about each other's crafts as actors.
Oh, I haven't seen that, but I remember.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are there any actors, actresses throughout your career who you feel you've really sort of been gravitated toward? You've been like, I love that work. I love what they're doing.
Well, as soon as you said that, it made me think when I had an opportunity to work with Meryl Streep. Like, you think, you know, she's such a master. You'll never get a chance, or will you? And we did, you know, once. just meeting on that first day, you know, where you're nervous and she says she's a little nervous too. you're like, to work with you, you know? It's... you know, you have no idea. Of course, you wouldn't think that in a million years. Mm-hmm. But that sort of, then you go to work. Or the first time I was going to do a movie with Cicely Tyson. And it was like, I was a young actress. It was just, let me walk out of the room. I'm meeting her for the first time and I'm going to work with her. But it's just, let's meet, look into each other's eyes. You pay your respects and then you go to work. And that's all you can hope to do.
Yeah, I mean,
can't be nervous now.
No,
you know, leave that back in the trailer.
But even thinking about that, though, you know, I mean, I have always just sort of thought of you in that caliber. Always, you know, I mean, I was always sad, you know, that you didn't get that What's Love Got to Do with It Oscar. Mm. I've talked about that on the show many times.
Mm-hmm. It'd been nice to get, but. I guess that was another purpose or reason why, you know, and certainly having not gotten it, I've continued to get work. Mm-hmm. So if I have a choice between one or the other, you know, you prefer the work.
Well, I saw an interview after that period, too, where you talked about, you know, the scripts weren't necessarily great, but you were getting a large volume of scripts afterwards.
After what?
After the What's Love Got to Do With
It.
No,
I didn't work for like 18 months after that.
Oh,
after
wow.
That movie came out, which was interesting. Oh, you know, you get an Oscar nomination and people have seen it and all the hoopla. And then nothing because, I don't know, maybe... I don't know. Are you a lead now? Are you in different category of sorts now? You know, or people have different expectations of what you're expecting. You're just expecting good scripts, good work, good offers.
Are you finding that there's more of a wealth of material now for you to choose from?
No, I don't. But maybe that's just the dilemma of the actor. Mm-hmm. There's never a wealth. I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe a year from now, 6 months from now, you know, of course I have a series, so I know that will go on. But other than that, I don't, it's sort of, the work sort of shows up and maybe when it shows up, maybe you get the script and you go to work in 30 days or in a couple of weeks, or can you do it next week?
Yeah.
So it's just about being real malleable and open.
Is that what drew you to wanting to do something like 9-1-1, just so you could have that, I know what I'm doing each year?
I think mainly what drew me to it was working with the company, working with Ryan Murphy, and I've been working with he and Brad Falchuk on American Horror Story
for four years. Yeah.
And that was a great experience. And then that was supposed to be a one-off, you know, just, you know, just that one season, those 12 episodes, and then move on. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. But then he came back with a different character that was intriguing and different than anything I'd ever done. And then the following year, same thing. And now you're part of it feels like a repertory company of actors whose work you appreciate, Jessica Lange, Kathy Bates, and Sarah Paulson, and, you know, on and on and on. Emma Roberts, and, you know, and all the guys, too. And so... You feel as if you are, you know, your talents and what you bring to the story are appreciated. So you like to be around when folk appreciate you, right? Mm-hmm. And so my contract was up then because I did the one-off and then came back for 3 years and then move on. And then Ryan called me with this idea of 9-1-1. And of course, if history is any indication of what future may look like, it was pretty good, pretty positive, having not read the script.
So you signed on the site.
Yeah. But he brings together, they have a real talent for great casting. And now the type of work that they do, they get, you know, what actor wouldn't want to you know, come aboard.
Of
you know,
course.
He gets, yeah, they get great cast.
Well, I love how you call it a company too, you know, because you started out in theater, mm-hmm. you know, getting your degrees from Yale.
Absolutely.
And do you find that you miss that?
I do. Mm-hmm. I do. So I've been thinking about that, you know, as a part of my otherhood, you know, when my 13-year-olds are up and probably fly up the nest together, mm-hmm. that I would love to get back to theater, mm-hmm. to the theater.
Yeah. I mean, you were in, honestly, one of my favorite plays ever, and I'm sad I wasn't able to see that, but Joe's Turner's Come and Gone. Mm-hmm.
August Wilson.
Yeah.
Lloyd Richards directing.
And it's, so many of those are being remade now too. Like Denzel's working on those.
Oh yes, for film.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. we have Fences and Ma Rainey's coming out now.
Right, like, and Jitney's coming to the Mark Taper, coming to LA yeah. later this year. So,
yeah. Are there any that you know, sort of you plays you really wish that you could be a part of? Something that you wish you could redo?
No, I'm always interested in new voices. Mm-hmm. You know, I certainly love, you know, I was able to do Fences, another mm-hmm. August Wilson play, and had a great run with that. Lawrence Fishburne, myself, Orlando Jones, and Wendell Pierce. I mean, mm-hmm. we had a ball, and I think it caught us off guard because mm-hmm. the theater was filled every night and really could have had a longer life than mm-hmm. what we initially set out, you know, contracting to do. But I also, the last show that I did on Broadway, Mountaintop by Katori Hall. Mm-hmm.
Yes, the Martin Luther King play.
Yes, and with then, Sam, you know, Jackson, Kenny Leon.
It's been a while, so I can spoil that you show up, you know, as you're there as the maid first, but then, you know, you're this,
I'm an angel.
Yeah.
I love that. It was just fresh. It was different. It was exciting. I got to rap. They called it a word bridge, you know, but I enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, who doesn't love the classics, but I love putting a spin on something new.
Yeah, I mean, and it's great, too, because the theater now is just filled with so many exciting mm-hmm. new Black voices,
I too. Can't wait to get back.
Yeah. Speaking of doing, like, Mountaintop, you know, that's interacting, you know, with Martin Luther King, you know, and you have played so many roles interacting with, you know, Black icons like mm-hmm. that. I mean, you know, you played Betty mm-hmm. Shabazz mm-hmm. three times, I believe. You have the cameo in Panther.
Tell me.
Van Peebles.
Yes, Marion Van
and
Peebles.
And then Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. And then Betty and Carrera.
Oh, yes. Yeah. With Mary J.
Yeah.
Yes.
Three times
the charm. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what's it feel like just being part of that, like, Black history? I mean, I don't think we get sort of films like that so much anymore, you know.
No, it was
not, yeah. Spike's Malcolm X
goes through cycles,
like,
right?
Yeah.
Goes through cycles, and yeah, it just intersected with my time here on Earth, and being ready for it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I enjoyed that. Those women are real inspiration. Their lives have been, and I was just hoping to pay respectful homage to mm-hmm. their life and to what they stood for, mm-hmm. you know?
There was a recent, even New York Times article
yeah.
talking about how the 90s was sort of seen as this sort of like Black renaissance. You know, there were a lot of Black directors mm-hmm. getting films, you know, there seemed like more actors were getting work, and then it sort of went away for a bit, and now we're back maybe in that era. I mean, do you find that filmmaking now just feels a little bit different than it did when you were making, like, Malcolm X and What's Love Got to Do with It and Stella?
Well, like I say, it feels like it's more tentpole. So, mm-hmm. you know, is there a place for me in that? Have I missed that time? That's why it's, you know, I'm pleased with all the platforms that they are. I can go back to television or, mm-hmm. you know, or to cable, to streaming, to Netflix, to Hulu, to Amazon. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just those, you know, five or six places as before. But yeah, I feel as if it's opened up a little bit. But telling a good story takes time and it takes craft. Mm-hmm. So that's what you're always looking for, the craft of it, not just a lot of it, mm-hmm. a lot of something, but something good. So it's still a challenge.
Yeah.
It still can be a challenge.
What role would you say that maybe you find you remember the most, you know, that you find most memorable to you? And it may not even be the one that, you know, like people always stop you on the street for.
No, definitely What's Love.
Okay.
So a lot of people stop me for that because so much, I always say, was required of me emotionally, physically.
Mm-hmm.
Time when I was, you know, pretty new to LA, pretty mm-hmm. new to being on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to be it was a make or break moment. Not it could have been, it was, you know, a make or break moment. And
yeah.
I think we all have those in our lives. There's some like defining moment, some fork in the road in a moment in our lives. Are we going to go left, go right? Are we prepared for this moment? Do we have enough preparation for this opportunity that's ahead of us? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't even know when it's coming. You have this audition in 3 days. You have 3 days notice, but you've had 30 years to prepare. Just mm-hmm. be excellent. You know, do your best for 30 years and maybe you'll be ready when you get 3 days notice.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. I've always been very drawn to horror as a fan, mm-hmm. you know, so it's been great seeing you in American Horror Story, but also, you know, as I mentioned, Strange Days, but also one of my favorite roles of yours is Vampire in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Listen, I revisited it too, and it's still funny. It holds up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That and even other things, you know, like watching you grow up being on shows like Alias and stuff.
Oh,
you know?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, finding you do stuff like that and to like Olympus Has Fallen too, you know, it's nice seeing you in these action roles and getting sort of this.
Or action movies, if not the roles.
Yeah, the action movies. Yeah.
Right.
You want to see the action roles next. That's what I want. You can do that.
I'm in the action movie.
Yeah.
But I have the action role.
Yeah. Have you take off the, you know, the pantsuit, you know, and pick up.
I was just in the action movie with the action role.
Okay,
you see,
great.
I got this ice on my ankle. Now the action roles show up.
Before you go, I do want to point out, so in our actual studio, we have a panel, the logo of like people who've inspired us in
mm-hmm.
the show. And
yes.
you are the first person to be on the show who is on that panel.
Really?
I'm
gonna
you're
going to show me something?
Like. Yes.
Okay.
That is the Keep It panel that's behind us when we record.
Oh,
you are
where am I?
Right there next to...
Oh, there I am!
Yes.
Next to B.
Yes.
Oh, I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but you know, you were the first one to, who's on the panel to be here.
Oh,
so,
oh
yes.
I see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you keep it going until you get all of these on the show.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being
thank
here.
Thank you. Thank
Angela.
You. It was a pleasure.
Yes. It was really an
appreciate
honor to meet
it.
You.
You too.
Yes. We'll be right back.
This is BVK for Ocean City Tourism, OCMD streaming audio. On March 11th, 2024, the title of the spot is STSA Leisure Summer. This is a 30-second composite stereo streaming audio mix.
Get away with friends to the laid-back Maryland coast, where you can catch up while casting off and hang 10 while hanging out, where a day on board is never boring and full throttle is half the fun, where you can sink a putt, raise a glass, and there's always room for one more round. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere. This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
And we're back. I feel like we were just talking about Kim Kardashian and Kanye West.
Can't get enough of her.
I just can't get enough. I'm KK crazy.
No.
For Kim Kardashian.
My face is melting.
Stop it. Why are you like this?
As we all know, Kim, star of Legally Blonde 3, has... you know, been very big about criminal justice reform and getting people out of prison. And Donald Trump's been helping.
There will soon be a TNT series based off this.
Yes. But this week, she's turned to Donald Trump to get another prisoner out. And this one is rapper A$AP Rocky, who is currently in solitary confinement in Sweden due to involvement in a physical fight that's actually, I believe, been like documented on social media and on
his own social media.
On his own and social media. Have none of these people seen a crime drama?
I guess not, no.
Why would you do that? The reality star solicited her pals in the White House to try and free A$AP. But unfortunately, as I tweeted about and expected, Trump made things worse by reaching out to the prime minister of Sweden.
Yeah, Sweden's like, we don't care.
Yeah. So basically, on July 1st, TMZ posted a video of A$AP allegedly throwing a man across the street in Stockholm as a fight broke out. But his Instagram showed other parts of the altercation. And also the caption was like, so a few drug addicts are not my fans. We don't know these guys and we didn't want trouble. They followed us for four blocks and they were slapping girls' butts who passed. Give me a break. They talk about how they're being followed by the man in camera. So it really seems like the event was really sort of instigated by these crazy fans. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, A$AP is the one who's arrested, and he's been there for 2 weeks and if convicted, could look at 6 years for defending himself, allegedly. That's what A$AP Ferg tweeted. They're part of the A$AP family.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
A$AP drag house, if you will. But after learning about A$AP's imprisonment, Kim Kardashian reached out to Jared Kushner.
Already.
Love
right.
reaching out
Your
to Jared
Your eyes should
Kushner.
Be crossing and falling out.
What was he, outside of a Nuremberg yeah. trial? And anyway, she tweeted on July 18th, thank you at Real Donald Trump, Secretary Pompeo, Jared Kushner, and everyone involved with the efforts to free A$AP Rocky and his two friends. Your commitment to justice reform is so appreciated. Prayer emoji. Crossed fingers emoji. And then Trump tweeted the next day, just spoke to at Kanye West about his friend A$AP Rocky's incarceration. The fact that Donald Trump is tweeting about A$AP Rocky and Kanye West is ludicrous to me.
It's wild.
But why? Go ahead.
I will be calling the very talented prime minister of Sweden to see what we can do about helping A$AP Rocky. So many people would like to see this quickly resolved.
Very talented is the craziest way to describe a prime minister. That is how you describe a magician. Secondly, he also gave a press conference in which he talked about how Melania was allegedly the one who taught him about A$AP Rocky. Tell me more. What on earth did she know about him?
What?
Was she familiar with the song Good For You? I truly want to know her name. I don't understand.
Were they at some fashion show, some rock the boat thing years ago?
And I also, he mysteriously spells A$AP Rocky's name correct every time, which means like there are several hands on the keyboard helping him out. But this also calls to mind the thing I most hated about Donald Trump from like 9-10 years ago, which is nobody has been, this seems so elementary to bring up, I'm sorry to do it, the obsessive name dropping. If he can claim he knows anybody or is friends with anybody, he will. That was what the entire Apprentice was about. Him being like, these are my friends. You're going to now lobby my friends to get money. Whatever.
Every single fucking competition would be like, you're here, you're making pizza.
Right.
My very good friend Sabaro is here.
Right. So in a way, it's just wise of Kim Kardashian to use her clout to go through him because it's so flattering to him. Like I guess in a way it's encouraging to see pop culture figures use the one tool we know we have with him, which is obsessive flattery.
I mean, stories like this, and also even like with the scooter story, like headlines are increasingly becoming like a very poorly done like game of Mad Libs.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
How are all of these names being jumbled together? What do they have to do with each other? I hate it. But yeah, also, it's just like, this is not how criminal justice reform works. Like, this is not how prison reform is supposed to work. Like, reaching out to the president is not the way to go. Like, you know, like, I'm excited that someone like with the platform like Kim Kardashian can create more visibility on this issue, maybe, but like, work with activists. You know what I mean? Like, don't work with Donald Trump in this whole scenario. It's just a frustrating thing to bear witness to for me.
Yeah, the idea that there's somehow progress occurring here when it in fact is just a circus is like, I guess, here's a phrase I would never want to use, peak 2019.
Right, because the grossest part about this is Donald Trump and the White House now using this as sort of free press to be like, we love black people.
Right.
Because in the same press conference, he was like, many, many members of the African American community have called me, friends of mine, and said, can you help? I personally don't know ASAP Rocky, but I can tell you he has tremendous support from the African-American community in this country. And when I say African-American, I think I can really say from everybody in the country, because we're all one.
Thank you, Bono. No. Does he think the African-American community is like a building? Like that there's a phone inside and that can reach him sometimes?
Also, flip side, the African-American community does not give a fuck about ASAP Rocky. Because
he's the third most talented person on that song with Kendrick Lamar and Drake. I'll say it.
I love bad bitches. It's my fucking problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful song. Uh-huh. This whole incident has brought up the fact that in 2016, in a Breakfast Club interview, ASAP was asked about Ferguson, and he said, why? Because I'm black. So every time something happens because I'm black, I got to stand up. What the fuck am I, Al Sharpton now? I'm ASAP Rocky. I did not sign up to be no political activist. I don't want to talk about no fucking Ferguson and shit because I don't live over there. I live in fucking Soho and Beverly Hills. I can't relate. I'm in the studio. I'm in these fashion studios. I'm in these bitches' drawers. I'm not doing anything outside of that. That's my life. He called Black Lives Matter a bandwagon and also mentioned that maybe Cosby would be innocent.
good coda.
Wow.
And now you're in Sweden, bitch.
Stay in Sweden. We don't need
to. So now we're supposed to care about his Black Lives Matter in Sweden.
I think there should be a game show where you are asked a very important question and you have to somehow get around to, I live in fashion houses. It's just weaving a tail until you get back to fashion houses.
And then, of course, the U.S. is telling Sweden that they should be treating ASAP Rocky fairly because he's an American. And people have pointed out that we don't even treat Americans fairly.
What about that?
Here. So Sweden should treat black people in prison better than America treats black people in prison.
Correct.
What a concept.
Yeah, do that thing we should be. How about that?
I think the only tweet that really made sense about it was Justin Bieber.
Which is wild to me.
Right.
Bieber is the voice of reason in all of this.
Who was also involved in the Scooter Braun thing. These are just all the same supporting players in a different season.
Yeah,
it's
right.
A new storyline.
No, I'm so ready for this American true crime story, whatever. Ryan Murphy's going to option this fast.
And I'm trying to not be, well, I thought I was mad at Justin Bieber for what he did on that version of Bad Guy. Guys, who wants to listen to that?
That remix, alleged remix with Billie Eilish, is one of the worst things I've ever heard.
It's horrible.
It is the sister nobody would want, the mother I did not deserve.
The power that doesn't have.
The domestic implications it has. He tweeted, I want my friend out. I appreciate you trying to help him, but while you're at it, Donald Trump, can you also let those kids out of cages?
Good.
The only good comment.
Right. I don't know who on his team composed that. I mean, yes.
It was him. He spelled your Y-O-U-R.
Oh,
okay. So we...
Good. Yes.
Yeah.
Authenticity.
He tweeted from juice box breaks at his church that he goes to. Haley Baldwin.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, if Bieber is the voice of reason, everyone else is in trouble.
Yeah.
It's just not the thing that I want to be.
Which obviously, you know, as we've said, what's happened to A$AP Rocky does sound horrible from a standpoint.
Yes.
And I hope he does get out. But it's sort of hard to feel bad for someone who has just sort of like not cared about other Black people in prison in general. Mm-mm. And yes, obviously it is awful what has happened to A$AP Rocky, particularly because it's probably race-related, as G-Eazy had his own detainment in Sweden for a drug possession and assault. But it's also unfortunate that now Trump is getting to use this as a marketing campaign for Black votes.
Right. No, it's incredibly flippant. There's nothing, there's no conscience there.
But I do bet Pete Buttigieg wishes he could get A$AP out of prison.
Oh, God, yeah.
No.
His first handful of...
He needs Black votes.
Yeah.
I know. And also, yeah, I just... When it comes to, like, criminal justice reform, like, it's not a sustainable plan of action to just reach out to Donald Trump every time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's just not how all of this shakes down. And if like Kim Kardashian or anybody trying to, you know, create platforms about this wanted to create real change, they would give other people who are bearing witness to all of this, you know, the tools and the ways to mobilize and organize around this issue. Because
right.
We all can't call Donald Trump, you know what I mean? Or whoever is the president at that time, regardless of who it is.
And it's good to make it public. And, you know, I don't want to knock Kim for doing this because what she has done has been great. But we're sort of at the point now where, like, each incident keeps happening where you're doing this personal reach out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, okay, so what are we doing beyond that? You know, because there's a lot of Black people in prison, a lot of Black trans people in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's, we have to do something more about it at this point.
And on top of that, like, Kim Kardashian and Kanye West, like, I hate to say it, like, can be as powerful as Donald Trump sometimes. Like, you, mm-hmm. like, they could mobilize on their own. They mm-hmm. don't necessarily need him. And it's just gross to read a tweet that's like, thank you, at Donald Trump. Like,
yeah,
that's something
right,
I never
right.
want to read.
No, that's from I would literally say, in a way, that is traumatizing to read.
Truly.
Right. They're just going to be like, we're going to execute him, actually. Thanks for calling, Trump. To piss off Trump, because he's annoying.
Yeah.
You know? At any point possible, don't tweet, thank you, Donald Trump. I'm trying to do something yourself.
Yeah.
Because he's proven to be very unhelpful in this. And I don't want us to start a war with Sweden.
There's that.
Over yep. A$AP Rocky.
Mm-hmm. I need... We get the ABBA Masters. I've just decided.
I want the ABBA Masters.
Oh, my God.
Please.
I would buy iconic. Them if I had the coins.
Oh, yeah.
I have an ABBA tattoo.
Do you?
Do you really?
I do. It says you can dance. It's Dancing Queen.
Oh.
Okay.
I know, right?
I always say Dancing Queen is my favorite song about giving weird compliments to an underage stranger.
Only 17.
I mean, yeah, God, I love
there's
you.
There's so many to choose from, though.
Yes, right,
really,
right.
So.
That's part of one of my favorite pop genres, by the way. The, like, I saw her standing there. It's like, she was just 17. It's like, was there a period where we were obsessed with 17-year-olds and getting to fuck them by jukeboxes?
I fucking guess. No, it's vile.
What's you guys don't decry this song that is tattooed on my body.
No, I love Dancing Queen.
I love it. I love it. I love ABBA. Oh, what's your favorite non-ABBA Gold song?
I'm going to go with I Do, I Do, I Do, I Do, I Do.
Mine's If It Wasn't for the Nights.
I love that song. I love that song.
A perfect song.
Mm-hmm.
What's yours?
My other alternate is The Winner Takes It All, but that's ABBA Gold, right?
Sure is.
I'm so sorry.
You're the one with the tattoo, sweetie.
You know, I can't keep
take
up
off that
with,
tattoo, yeah. bitch. Yeah. Okay? I can name every Hall & Oates song. That's why it's on my arm.
I have not earned my stripes. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mom.
Honey,
in front
honey.
Of me, I hold no photo
honey,
because
honey,
you don't deserve it.
I'm sorry. I let you down.
When we're back, keep it. And mine might be Fran. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. It is Keep It.
Whee!
Fran, ladies first.
Oh my gosh, thank you. I'm so excited. My Keep It this week is to everyone who's watching the Lion King remake right now and coming out of that theater, particularly gays on Twitter, are really mad about the fact that Scar was not gay in this rendition of The Lion King.
Not that he was gay the first time.
No, he wasn't like explicitly gay, but he had a queeny voice.
Yes.
He had actually limp wrists. Like Scar literally had like limp wrists in like the cartoon version. And he was kind of a queen. And, you know, the gays are mad. There were tweets about this. People were saying, oh, I thought The Lion King was wonderful. Timon and Pumbaa were perfect. Spirit fit beautifully. My only criticism is I wish Scar delivered one line like the original and that he was more gay. Or people are calling it the heterofication of gay icon Scar. So here's the thing. This is wild because, first of all, as you said, Scar was not gay.
Right.
He had a queer affect. And, you know.
His hair is kind of Cher-like.
Yes, true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
This is just like when Ray was here talking about how people assumed Ursula was black.
Right.
That's what. Yes, it's like that. But it's wild also. Like, we as queer people, yes, like we saw ourselves in a lot of villains. Like, you know, Prince John in Robin Hood was a queen, and like Ursula was modeled after Divine, the drag queen. And like, there are a lot of villains that have like queenie behaviors.
Jafar, yes.
But like, Jafar, oh my gosh, is actually voiced by a gay man. But it's 2019 now, and we have real actual gay characters that we can invest in, maybe hopefully played by gay actors one day that we can, you know, vouch for and, you know, try and get out into the mainstream. So I just think it's crazy that people are using this backwards knowledge of like, oh, it like needs to be like the original and have like, it's such a failure of the imagination, first of all. But second of all, like that is kind of the same knowledge that people are that's the same like logic that people are weaponizing against like Ariel being black in like the new remake. It's like, it needs to be like the original. It's like, no, like it actually doesn't. And like, we as queer people don't need to like look for scraps in like our cartoon movies and in our like kids movies.
You know what's interesting? Jeremy Irons, the voice of Scar, is one of those Tim Curry people where there's actually nothing gay about him. It's just like a heterosexual version of camp. There's like a sort of a refined quality that has like a little bit of a sinister snicker in it.
Yeah.
That's not
British
gay.
Too.
Yes. It's not right. Yeah.
You know? I always say Jeremy Irons is kind of like the male Cate Blanchett, and that there's a refined quality there, but there's also a slight eyebrow arch that indicates something is a little bit extra fabulous, you know, but it's not, but that's not the same thing as it being gay.
Yeah. Mm. And
it's very similar to...
He has such a beautiful voice, anyway.
He does have a gorgeous voice. It's very similar, you know, to the drama we had around Beauty and the Beast, right? Mm-hmm. The live-action one.
Oh, it's right.
Like, you know, with the gay moment. What was the hug?
Oh, my
the
God.
Embrace.
Terrible.
Gay people always hugging.
A fist bump would have been more realistic. You know, it's... I'm tired of these little tiny moments, mm-hmm. you know? And I think... we just constantly had this push and pull in the media. And I don't want a coded gay star,
no.
you know? Like, because what does that even mean?
Yeah.
You know? I'm excited that we're finally going to stop having that push and pull with Marvel.
Exactly,
because
yes.
they announced their whole new slate of movies that I am the most excited for here.
Which
sure.
includes the first trans superhero played by Scarlett Johansson. So excited.
But, you know, Tessa Thompson will be playing Valkyrie in the new Thor. She will be LGBT. She'll be bi as she is in the comics. Mm-hmm. And someone in Eternals is going to be a gay character. Kevin Feige confirmed. And everyone thinks it's Richard Madden playing that character. I don't know why people would think that.
Right.
Certainly has nothing to do with him walking around having a bromance with Brandon Flynn.
I was going to say, I couldn't remember that guy's name. Thank God you did. I'm sure I've brought this up before, but isn't it crazy that Jeremy Irons doesn't have a Grammy? He's one away from the full EGOT. Mm-hmm. And it's like, girl, it's like you have the audiobook voice. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, he would be what perfect.
One Great Expectations is sitting here waiting for you to read it.
Well, I was also a little mad that Be Prepared was cut.
Yeah, that's one of the best songs. It's like, that's also like a queer anthem. I mean, if I'm going to like grab for like queer material in like a straight movie, you know what I mean?
And shout out to Keep It Guest Billy Eichner, who really was fabulous in it.
He was. I don't know if I cried during Can You Feel the Love Tonight, as Billy said he did.
Uh-huh.
I was really just sort of like, whoo, Beyonce sounds great. why is she singing a duet with Donald Glover?
Mm-hmm.
Not really a vocal match, if you will.
Also, the power of Beyonce is also not a match for Nala, one of the most boring characters who ever lived.
Yeah. Nala, I mean, they tried to make her a bit more feminist in this movie, right? You know, I don't remember the lionesses attacking so much at the end, but, you know, when she's like, lions, Are you with me? I felt it.
And speaking of Billy and like people using like their voices for productive conversations, like I love that Billy's kind of using a lot of his like PR tour for this movie to talk about LGBTQ representation in Hollywood and also like casting a queer actor in a quote unquote straight role, even though he said that he like played Timon with a gay sensibility. I don't know what that means. I think that's hilarious. But anyways, I love that he's using his PR tour to be like, yeah, I'm actually like working on a gay rom-com. I think that gay people should be allowed to play straight people. They have the range. We should do everything. So, you know, that's productive conversation. And I think your
point... Of course they can. I mean, you're here. Right. Our first gay Keep It co-host.
That's right. So. The first one in the history of Keep It. But, you know, your Marvel point is also a great illustration of the fact that, like, let's work and mobilize and get up in arms about those things, about getting the first queer superhero, as opposed to, like, being like, well, why isn't Scar a homosexual? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Why isn't the ninth build character in this movie sort of gay? Yeah.
Exactly.
Also, who would he be fucking? There only seem to be... three male lions in this project.
Yeah, right.
Mufasa and Simba.
Exactly. Exactly.
Simba was probably a little gay in this movie.
Oh, for sure. I mean, originally voiced by Jonathan Taylor Thomas, who maybe also one would say has a quote unquote gay sensibility.
Wow. It's tool time. Hey. Lewis, what is your keep it this week?
My keep it is to certain storylines on a show I have adored. Now, let me tell you something about Big Little Lies, which is the show I'm going to be talking about. It really did deliver the essential nutrients I need from the show. Certain things we got, particularly in the final episode, but the whole season. Nicole Kidman in her limp butterscotch wig, finding her inner strength at a critical moment.
Her practical magic wig?
Precisely, yes. Yeah, it is kind of practical magic-y.
She just had her hairdresser dusted off. No. I'm sure she still had it at home.
A la when Julia Roberts did that movie where she used that old wig from the movie she did in Notting Hill for Valentine's Day. The same bob. Anyway, we also got Meryl Streep proving you can play the part of a psychopath using only incisors acting.
Yeah.
That's got to be a Yale exercise.
Her and her teeth had a wonderful performance.
Right. You just looked at those teeth and you're like, those teeth would kill. We got Shailene Woodley enjoying her job at the aquarium. I don't know. I enjoyed that too. However,
did you?
Yeah. Her nervousness about being at the aquarium really spoke to me. But we also had several storylines that just didn't pan out. First of all, Bonnie, who Zoe Kravitz, who spent the whole season just with a migraine. That was her whole acting. Her storyline tied up with her telling her husband she wasn't in love with him. Girl, who is your husband? I'm not thinking about him. Talk about ninth build. What's he doing on this show?
Her husband shared more scenes over the course of two seasons with Adam Scott than
right.
he did her.
Our good friend.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that never panned out either. What, they are mad at each other? Great. Mm. Secondly, so Renata, who is Laura Dern, hero, whatever. She destroyed her husband's like game room, which was a big gifable awesome moment or whatever.
She's got hot sauce in her bag.
No. Swag. I know the song.
I loved you saying swag.
No. But the fact is, they couldn't write around the fact that Renata would have left her husband a long time ago. That just made no sense. First of all, he looks like Warren Zevon. I know that's not her type. Second of all,
I was waiting for them to do something with that, you know, because there's this idea that she's a strong woman. It starts out with her women in power. And if it's supposed to be a story about a woman being outwardly powerful, but like secretly not being able to do it, they really sort of failed. I thought one of the weirdest scenes was when she was talking to Jane, like at the party they had.
Right.
And was like, we always stay. And it's like, do you?
When?
You must know many women who've gotten divorces. Madeline got one.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What metric are you using here? And then lastly, the Reese Witherspoon, Adam Scott storyline tied up with them deciding to renew their vows. Guys, this is going to seem like a bold proclamation. I find vow renewals depressing.
Yeah.
You're already married. It doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't solve your storyline. Doesn't make me believe you're in love. What happens 3 months from now?
Yeah.
You're still in this damn marriage. You still don't trust each other secretly.
Vow renewals really sort of make the most sense on like daytime soap operas because, you know, John and Marlena are renewing their vows because she was presumed dead for 8 years, you know? Right. Yeah.
I thought it was crazy that Reese and her husband's, like, kind of whole, the whole season was around their tension and, like, what would I would hope amount to, like, an explosive moment that really just dissolved toward right. the end. That was, like, so, especially since every other cast member got to, like, explode so many times. You know, like, Laura Dern screamed so yeah. much in this season, and that's amazing. And that is, like, yes, what I signed up for, absolutely.
It's very weird. Reese seemed to take a step back this season, whereas last mm-hmm. year was just, like, she was the main character.
Right.
And you could mm-hmm. see why she was the contender with Nicole to get that Emmy. Mm-hmm. And this year, you know, I feel like Adam Scott was more of the person that I really want to see be nominated this year.
Well,
because he was doing so much with that role, and her role was just to sort of be like, do you trust me every episode?
Right. Mm-hmm. His role had more mystery to it. I kept uh-huh. wondering, like, what's going on with him? Whereas with her, she was just sorry the whole season, you know? Yes.
And it was a character development that felt, like, earned, you know what I mean?
Did her daughter go to college? I mean, like, does she care about anything else besides this marriage at
oh,
this
yeah.
point?
That daughter disappeared, and I love her. She's such a good actor, yeah, Catherine Newton. Great. She was in Ben Is Back.
Mm, yeah. Yes. And, you know, she's just sort of there in the final episode. She's like, I really need to tell him. And it's like, okay, cool. So many of these storylines felt stretched out.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so many of the moments that happened in the finale seemed like they should have been the midpoint of the series, and I feel like would have been last season.
I think this season felt like a movie, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to, like, what is happening in episode two of this season? You know what I mean? Like, everything you needed to know basically occurred in the past, in the last hour and a half.
Yeah.
So.
And that's the same thing with Renata, you know? Like, that was so much fun, but, like, why didn't she find out about this nanny earlier? Mm-hmm. Why didn't she destroy the toys and things earlier and then mm-hmm. just sort of leave and we could see them doing anything else with their mm-hmm. lives? And then it just sort of ends with them going, spoiler alert, ends with them going to the police station, and then we don't know what happened there.
So
either.
Your kids are just left alone now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what? we've been led to believe in the stakes of this moment the entire season, and then they basically just give up and say, all right, well, we'll risk it. And then right. we don't know what they risked ultimately.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. It was sort of went nowhere.
Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, and
I don't want a season three.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I didn't even want a season two. If I wanted a season two, it was like for more screams. And then I got a lot of screams, and maybe it was too much. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Because, like, the moments, like, had a little less preciousness every time Laura Dern freaked out, which I loved every time. But, like, it definitely felt, and I know that this is a consequence of, like, internal things and, like, how the production was made. But, you know, season two felt, like, a lot more self-aware. You know what I mean?
Totally,
like, it
yeah,
knew
yeah.
what its audience was. It knew how to make GIFs and memes now and, like, felt a little bit like a camp cage match at times.
You could see the meetings they had. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we need Laura Dern to lip sync It's My House right here. If you want this, you want a season three, you're going to lip sync It's My House.
Which is crazy that they went there and then they let Renata destroy the you know, the railway, the train station or whatever, but they wouldn't give us the ice cream scene. Why?
Yeah,
why?
Like, right, right.
Throw the ice cream at her.
And you should have, natural progression of her singing It's My House and I Live Here isn't just, you know, like moving out of the house and losing it. Like, she should burn that fucking house down.
Right.
Someone burns down a house on Riverdale every week.
And by the way, if she had divorced this guy a lot earlier, then we would have gotten a lot of Renata being single and figuring out her new life, which right. would have been way more interesting.
Right. You know? Exactly.
Yeah, she would have looked up Baron Davis.
Right.
I said that the season three should be Black women in a new setting.
Totally.
Laura Dern moves to ATL to start, like, a new life and career and, like, work in sports or something there.
Mm.
So she's the person who goes over.
And she'll be the Kim Zolciak?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be
that sells right
fantastic.
In the room. Yes. Uh-huh.
Yes. And you get, like, a Nia Long, Gabrielle Union. Mm-hmm. It's like, I think that would be hot.
Vanessa Williams is the judge? Anyway.
Yes. Something. But that's what I want to see.
Perfect. Wow. Put Ira on season three, everybody. Let's do this.
And then Jean-Marc Vallée will come in and redo it all. My keep it this week is to The Hollywood Reporter.
Oh, that publication.
Oh.
Yes, that scrappy free news publication that they give you on the street.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like The Village Voice.
Oh, I see, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They recently did a profile of Leonardo DiCaprio, which makes sense. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is coming out this weekend, mm-hmm. and I'm actually very excited to see it. I do love Tarantino,
right.
despite him being messy.
No, we had Kyle Buchanan here before, I'm sure I've said. I am excited about Quentin Tarantino doing a movie about Hollywood, since that seems to be all he really cares about, you know?
So yeah,
I don't need to recontextualize Charles Manson a moment longer, but oh well.
I know. And, you know, we did Hateful Eight, and it was a mess. And I feel like there's the bar.
Yeah.
You can't go worse than that.
Yeah.
So I'm sure I'll at least really enjoy this.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a profile of Leonardo DiCaprio, which they couldn't even get him to comment for. So it's really sort of a Frank Sinatra has a cold sort of profile where you're talking to other people around him and stuff. But the profile is so unnecessarily rude. And if I'm saying it's unnecessarily rude, then you know it's rude.
There's a crisis of conscience, yes.
First of all, the tweet when they shared the article said, unlike virtually every other A-lister, Leonardo DiCaprio has rebuffed franchises, has never donned spandex, wielded a lightsaber, or starred in a sequel, yet he has dominated the box office and award season for more than two decades. Okay, bitch.
Yeah, right. My hero? Yeah.
Do you have to drag other actors to just say Leonardo DiCaprio's great?
Yeah, right. That is really strange. It's like he's in these auteuristic, but still A-list director movies.
Right.
I don't know. It doesn't feel like he made risky choices to me.
He hasn't. I mean, Scorsese and Tarantino are basically white male film nerd franchises.
Yeah.
You know, it's a Tarantino movie might as well be the Marvel Cinematic Universe because you know what you're getting each time.
Yeah.
You know, you're working with Inarritu and people like that and Christopher Nolan. You know, it's you are making movies that have very large budgets, are from white male directors aside from like an Inarritu, and it's not really taking any sort of risk.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is lended to the fact that he is a white male in Hollywood who, one, had a big break in Titanic when he was 23, didn't have really that moment for Kate Winslet or anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot has been afforded to him to be able to do this, and he keeps working with these kind of directors in these big budget things, and we haven't seen him do anything like do some indies or like take a chance on a smaller director or really even sort of use his clout to prop up, you know, other diverse actors or any other sort of roles. I guess he played J. Edgar.
Oh my God, J. Edgar. Wow. That I always said that movie looks like it was filmed in a darkened Abercrombie.
Oh,
like it's like one spotlight over the jeans in the corner. That's like the light they used.
Marion Williamson also asked to leave Abercrombie. No, we no longer do models.
Also, is he one of these people that hasn't worked with a female director in 100 years?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sounds right.
And the article continued to go on to just sort of trash other people by saying, among his compatriots, DiCaprio is by far the one most coveted by studio heads and top-tier directors, offering that rare blend of prestige, since three of his past five films have been nominated for Best Picture, and box office prowess. Those same films earned a combined $1.8 billion worldwide. While Will Smith is doing Netflix originals and a Disney remake, Jennifer Lawrence is on a cold streak, and Robert Downey Jr. only makes his money as Tony Stark, DiCaprio continues to choose films that would seem risky on paper, typically R-rated, longer than 2 hours, and with budgets topping $80 million, bets that have paid off and given him an unrivaled amount of power.
He's
the only talented man. He has taste. The others, dumbasses.
First of all, Jennifer Lawrence is around the age that he was when he did Titanic. She came out the gate with so much prestige and box office success. And I wonder if there's something to do with the fact that she is a woman in Hollywood. Mm. And of course, her options are going to start to cool.
Yeah, right. That she has any, whatever, cold streak. What does that mean? Two movies in a row that didn't do that well?
Right.
You know? People, she is beloved. And also, she worked with a female director. I saw The Beaver.
And Robert Downey Jr., which maybe there's something in the idea that he had a lot of problems in Hollywood and basically made this huge comeback. And it wasn't really superhero brand name recognition that got him this, because Iron Man wasn't really a thing. No one gave a fuck about Iron Man the way that they do Spider-Man or the Hulk, et cetera.
And I wouldn't have known who Iron Man was growing up.
And the Hulk movies flopped. So it was really Robert Downey Jr. taking that role and making him maybe one of the biggest superheroes now in movie franchises.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
And he's just left it now with Endgame. So he has a whole career that he can start doing now that we haven't seen from him.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I did see the movie The Judge, which I recommend unseeing if you've seen it. Robert Duvall, really great, really gritty scene in that movie.
And then the Will Smith thing. I mean, that's sort of the idea too, that actors who aren't Leo have been doing riskier things. You know, you see like even women of his caliber, like a Meryl Streep or something, mm-hmm. doing something like Big Little Lies, doing something that is, you know, maybe smaller in movie scale. Like, I'm not seeing Leo really do anything like The Hours.
No, right.
Which isn't to knock Leo DiCaprio. I love him as an actor. I think he's pretty great, and I support a lot of the work that he's done with environmental issues. But the article is just basically tongue-lathering him like he's in Cats.
It's not impressive that there's one straight actor who can sustain a massive movie career based on non-franchises. It's just like, yeah, there should be one of those. There should be 25 of those, you know?
Yeah, I just think that this whole thing, again, it's just like, I don't feel like we need to give him, journalistically, it doesn't make sense to write a profile without getting comment. Like, I just don't know why you are seeking out to write this. And also, it's Leonardo de fucking Caprio. Like, we don't need all these qualifiers. It's ridiculous.
The maybe wildest thing of the profile, too, is that they gloss over something that was pretty insane in it. They mentioned just offhand that he had a no eye contact clause for the movie.
Oh, for this movie?
Wait, what?
Yeah, for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. The article says
only 24-year-old women may look his way.
What does that mean?
Like Prince?
Some people who worked on the film told Hollywood Reporter apparently that they were asked not to make eye contact with Leonardo DiCaprio on set, which seems like a more interesting story for you to dive into than saying, Jennifer Lawrence, washed up!
She had two bad movies.
Because the whole article is about how he's great,
yeah.
right? And then you have the one aside that doesn't seem great, and you don't delve into it.
Yeah. I haven't read the piece. Did the piece like call into question anything having to do with Tarantino and their relationship? Like, did it like?
No.
That's crazy to me. That's the thing I would read, right? Mm-hmm. And like, and it's that I think would be a more engaging story as journalists, as reporters. Like, that's the story we want to look out for. Not like, hey, have you ever heard of Leonardo DiCaprio? You know right. what I mean?
He like does pretty well. Yeah.
There's some very interesting sort of anecdotes in it too about how they had met originally. At the premiere of True Romance, and DiCaprio talked about how he loved the script so much, and they tried to work together for years, and Inglourious Basterds didn't work out, but he was able to do Django, and he didn't even envision DiCaprio for that role at first, but DiCaprio was, you know, sort of very insistent about it, and that stuff was interesting, but, you know, like, his brand is excellence, how Leonardo DiCaprio became Hollywood's last movie star.
What
a moment.
I feel like everybody's been called Hollywood's last movie star.
Yeah. Depends on who's writing it.
Yeah, right.
And which publicist has gotten that right.
Like, I've heard Julia Roberts called that before. I will say that Django Unchained is my favorite Leonardo DiCaprio performance, specifically because you wouldn't think he would do it. It's too broad. And not in a serious, I'm a billionaire who owns a boat, and also there's something crazy about me way, which is what he usually plays.
I'm really more for Leo's, you know, twink era, you know, Romeo plus Juliet, mm-hmm. iconic,
the
classic.
Beach, yes.
Absolutely.
I think that I really loved him in Wolf of Wall Street. Yeah,
also
that
amazing.
Is also sort of
a billionaire with
role.
A boat, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. that's a broad sort of role. It had a bit more nuance,
yeah.
I think, than Great Gatsby. Mm. But I
mean, that movie sucks. I hate when people like The Great Gatsby.
I didn't say I liked it.
No, I'm just saying. It's like we pretended like it was like a splashy, fun movie we all liked. It was like nonsensically shitty.
IndieWire just called it one of the best movies of the decade or something. It was on their like big
list. Oh, the 100 list. Mm. Yeah. What was their number one? Moonlight?
Moonlight.
I'll allow it.
There was other broad role, Shutter Island, which I didn't love, but I feel like maybe I'd like it a bit more on rewatch. Mm-hmm. I liked what he did in it. If I'm talking about my favorite Leo role, it is probably Gangs of New York, which I think is very
interesting.
Underrated. I think that movie is
that
highly underrated.
I'm somewhat surprised.
Yeah, me too.
That's one of my favorite movies.
My favorite Cami Diaz prestige project. And yes, I do remember The Counselor.
Where she fucked a car windshield. Wild Time.
The Windshield was nominated.
This is now the second podcast where you have talked about the fact that Cameron Diaz has fucked a car.
Is it?
Yeah, this is the last time we were on Food for Thought. We did a live show together, and you talked about how Cameron Diaz fucked a car.
It's a good bet.
You can't stop talking about it.
It's your who's on first.
So obsessed.
Thank you so much for being here today, Fran.
Of course. My pleasure.
Yes. People should listen to Food for Thought.
Yes.
And, we neglected to ask you.
Yes.
Which View co-host are you?
I mean, I think I have to say Rosie Perez, Latina View co-host. We have to stand.
It is crazy that we had Rosie Perez just giving us thoughts every day for a while. And what did we do with it? Nothing.
Truly. We took her for granted.
Oscar nominee.
Yeah. We do take her for granted because I feel like every year her dancing on Soul Train is trending on Twitter.
And
people continue to forget it.
Right. I remember, guys. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, that is our show. Thank you, Fran. Thank you again to Miss Angela Bassett.
Well,
we'll see you next week. Keep It is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Rustin is our producer. Our editor is Sarah Barrett, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadine Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week. This podcast is made possible by you, the listeners, and the Pew Charitable Trust.
Haha.
But who are you? We know that somewhere in the world you download this podcast or you're subscribed and you've rated it on iTunes, but we know literally nothing else about you.
So if you have a few minutes, you can help us make this show better by telling us more about you and what you want to hear. Don't go too far in, though. I mean, think about what I really want to know. You know what I'm saying? Just go to go.crooked.com/survey to take a short survey and leave your feedback about the show. That's go.crooked.com/survey. As a thank you, you'll be entered to win a $100 Amazon gift card. $100 just for a couple minutes? Hell yeah.
I think I want that gift card.
I'm going to say, are we eligible? I'll tell you, I'll give you a piece of my mind.
I think we've had enough.
Okay.
With chocolate treats mixed into dark chocolate ice cream, the Tillamook Chocolate Collection is a chocolate game changer. Because the thing that pairs best with chocolate is more chocolate. Tillamook Chocolate Collection Ice Cream. Extraordinary dairy.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.